One flesh, one end, bitch.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you the updates you really want on whether or not you should take the time to read all those books you keep seeing on TikTok. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Today, we are bringing you a weird one. I don't know how else to intro it other than it's unique. It is Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir. And put it this way, the sentence on the front of my book says, "Lesbian necromancers explore a haunted gothic palace in space." So Gideon lives on this desolate planet of necromancers. Gideon is a girl and wants to get out. And her nemesis is like the young ruler's daughter of the planet, Harrowhark. And Gideon's escape path ends up being entering this sort of contest to become this immortal being with Harrow. And they get to this creepy palace thing and a murder mystery unfolds. They also still don't totally know what they're doing there. And it gets real weird. And there's lots of like skeletons and death and weird things. So yeah, picture Inheritance Games meets Hunger Games meets Necromancers in Space.
Yes.
I don't know.
it's a wild book. It's fantasy technically, but it's actually kind of technically science fiction because it's technically set in the future. There's a lot of layers, but we should get into reviews. Do you guys have yours?
Yes. So I chose a 3-star review because I didn't really like the 1-stars or 2-star reviews. The 1-stars were mainly like DNFs, and I felt like that's a cop-out. So 3-star review from Goodreads. In retrospect, this book is a bag of Doritos mix. Either you love the... Oh my God, I'm gonna... Okay. Either you love the pastiche or you don't. But there's nothing about this that makes it a classic that people will come back to time and time again. It's snack food, pure and simple. Fun to munch crunch, some parts better than others, but perhaps just the occasional too much to really sit well.
Interesting. I've never heard the word pastiche before.
I don't even know if I said it right, but I came across it and I was like, God.
I also don't know that word. Why are sophisticated people reading this book?
Yeah, that's what I thought. Amen. But also talking about Doritos mixes.
I mean, Doritos can be sophisticated.
Can they?
No.
Yeah, doing that statement some side eye.
I have 2 reviews. One serious and one funny. Okay. The serious one I want to read first is from Storygraph. It's a 4-star review. Also a slightly sophisticated person with some big words in here, but a mysterious and intricate world populated with fun characters who the author leads through a miserable gauntlet. It took me a while to get used to the anachronistic speech that clashed with the assumed setting. The foreshadowing of its twists was too strong, leaving me hoping they wouldn't come true, then despairing as they did. While it was marketed as a light romp, it repeatedly punches the reader in the guts. I enjoyed the experience of reading it, but be prepared to be left emotionally exhausted.
Wow. 4 stars with all that.
Yeah.
I feel like that was fair. And here's the funnier one. 5-star review. I have once again been tricked into reading a jaw-dropping, amazing book because I was told it's gay.
They got us again.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna disclaimer though, despite what I read on the cover in that review, I thought it was like super, super subtle lesbian sexuality. I don't know. There was like,
yeah,
this is pretty like YA when it comes to romance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely queer representation, but I don't think it goes hard enough to be like a queer book.
Right. Like the main character makes comments about like hitting on women, and that's pretty much it.
Exactly. She's a little horn dog.
Yeah. And her main love interest, we don't really know if she's actually.
It was kind of not a romance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Anyway, but if that gets you going, sure.
Okay. I have another very funny review. It's a one-star DNF, so I did not consider it a cop-out. This is, I hate to say it. I hope I don't sound ridiculous. I don't know what the fuck is happening in this book. This book could be walking down the street. I wouldn't know a thing. Sorry to this book.
You know, that's fair, honestly. It was a little confusing at times.
So Casey picked this book. And I was super skeptical when I first picked it up. I texted Catherine when I was like 60 some pages in. I go, WTF is this book? I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah. And I had finished it by that time. And so I was like, oh, just keep reading. You won't know what's happening at all.
Power through. Yeah. So my experience reading this book, I think I probably liked it the most out of all of us. But the first maybe 60 to 100 pages are genuinely really confusing. Like, I remember when I was reading it the whole time, like, again, like, probably like a whole, like, first 100 pages, I thought that it was going to be a 1 or 2 star read for me. I ended up rating it much higher, but yeah, the writing style takes some getting used to. The world building, I think, could be a little stronger in the beginning. Like,
the world building happened without the reader.
Yes.
It was just there, and you were just like adapt or die.
And I saw many, many reviews citing that, but still giving it like 4 or 5 stars.
Yeah.
It's a simple world, but at the same time, not very simple.
Well, it's simple, but you don't know it's simple until you're like a third of the way through the book, because then you finally start to understand what's going on. And then you're like, oh, actually, I kind of get it.
Yeah. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. But the whole first part, they're just like not telling you what the numbers are.
Yeah, it's super weird beginning. Like I said, though, that didn't deter most people. Goodreads overall review 4.2 out of 5. Amazon review 4.5 out of 5. What about you guys?
I gave it a 4 stars. So I think the Amazon reviews are like a little high, but in general, I'm like vaguely on par with that. I thought this book was really, really unique. That's ultimately why I loved it so much, is that it's unlike anything else I've ever read. And I think that's a big part of what wins me over as a reader. However, I'm honestly a little surprised that the super confusing beginning didn't knock the ratings down more. Like, maybe I'm just dumb or something, but good for the book. Good. I'm glad it succeeded.
I don't think you're dumb. The first part of the book is confusing because you just kind of get into the head of this. I don't really know how to describe her. She is very Gideon's perspective when she's not talking is super like eloquent. And like college level words are used. And then the stuff that comes out of her mouth is like prepubescent teenager. So you're kind of just like in a 180 shift between those two. But I rated it a 3 stars, but I'm probably closer to like 3.25, 3.5. Because like, I feel like I rate a lot of things 3 stars, but they're never like equal. I liked the book in the sense of like, even though that I was confused, it's so unique, like Casey said, like, I literally can't compare anything to it. It's completely different from most fantasy or sci-fi books. I don't even think it's technically fantasy. I think it's sci-fi, futuristic, dystopian. So because of that, it gets a little bit higher than a 3.
So I'm kind of where you were at. I initially gave it 3 stars after I read it, and I'm really pretty anti like going back and changing my rating on Goodreads, but I went ahead and went back and bumped it up to a 4 because I feel like 3-star books, I'm pretty like, yeah, that was fine. And at first I was like, yeah, that book was fine. And the more I thought about it, I was like, that was a crazy unique book. And I really didn't want to put it down, even though the whole time I was like, this is the weirdest shit I have ever read. And so I ended up bumping up to a 4. I even said, I don't think I will pick up the second book because that was so weird. And then like 24 hours later, I had the second book from the library in my hands. fair warning, I'm a chapter into that one and once again, confused as hell.
No.
So.
Yeah, such hope, because I do really want to read the second one, and my whole hope was like, okay, now I have one book down in this world, like surely the next book I won't find as confusing.
Well, let's get in to our non-spoilery discussion questions. So we've talked about this very unique weird book. Is it more plot or character driven?
Plot. Everything is basically out of their hands. It's at least not like, I mean, yeah, I stand by that. I think it's plot driven. I think the characters are interesting, but I don't think that their character development is what's really driving the book.
I agree. I think it's plot. While Gideon is an incredibly compelling character, and I was pretty intrigued by all of the characters, they are at the mercy of this competition thing. So they really have no say in what's going to happen, even though they think they do.
Yeah. It's another trial type book.
Yeah. Right. It's 100% plot driven. I mean, they're at the mercy of this trial, but also a thousand years worth of history and the build up to a bunch of stuff in this world. So they're kind of at the mercy of a lot of external factors. So even though the characters aren't flat by any means, it's still very much so they are at mercy to the plot.
Yeah. They're all, for listeners, they're all competing. So there's these 9 different planets basically in this new world, and they're all sort of like, it's like each planet is a state. So they're all part of the same country kind of, but they're all separate entities.
Like I said, picture Hunger Games, like districts.
Yeah, districts, but spacey. And so all like leaders from each of the 9 planets get together to compete to sort of achieve this higher power status. And the whole time, at least for me, I wasn't really sure what it actually meant, but they want this title and they have to win it in these trials, but they don't actually know how to win it. They just know they have to compete in these trials and they should be able to find the answer along the way.
There's also like no rules. They're literally just put in this creepy old house and been like, okay, good luck. Like yeah. There's no guidance. It's very strange, but that's what makes it intriguing, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say it's super confusing because actually, Casey, it's only 8 planets that compete because the first planet is the Emperor.
But right. They're on that planet anyway.
Yeah.
Dead planet. It doesn't exist anymore.
Basically, this whole like solar system they're in is dying. And so is like their entire race, it sounds like. So they're like racing against a dying species.
Which is ironic because they're necromancers.
Yeah. So they bring back the dead.
So I already said that I picked up the second book. If I'm going off the first chapter, I don't know if I'll keep going, but I know it will get better just like the other one. Are you guys going to continue or have you read other books by the author?
I haven't read other books by the author, but I am planning on reading the second book.
Yeah, the first one ends on kind of a cliffhanger and I'm mildly curious about what happens next, but I don't know if I can put up with 500 pages of confusion again. So we'll see if it's a finish reading kind of thing.
Okay. How was the pacing of the book for you guys?
I think we said the beginning is confusing. So at first I was like, oh man, gotta pick it back up. But then I could not put it down once I got like more into it, because you're so confused about whatever the heck's happening in this creepy ass house that you want to know what's happening next. So I thought the pacing was pretty good despite being almost 450 pages. I thought it was like, once you get used to the writing style, it gets to be a really easy read.
I agree with that. I think the beginning took me the longest just because I was a little confused. And I would kept like trying to take time to like try to understand what I had read. After that, though, I think the whole second half of the book I finished in less than a day. Like it really picks up. So I think the pacing is overall pretty good.
Yeah. I'm like looking back at my Goodreads, like tracking thing. And it took me technically 11 days to read it, but that's because the first like 100 pages took me 10 of those days or 9 of those days, because it wasn't getting me into it very well. Cause I was just confused and not sure what was going on. But then once I got into the trials and into this new gothic house and these new characters, I was hooked. So that didn't take me very long to read.
All right. And last question. Would you watch a movie or TV show of this book?
Probably not. I don't mind a good fantasy book with a little bit of gore in it. This was a lot of dead bodies. I don't know if I'm interested in seeing it on the screen. I don't know. Like, it was such an interesting concept, but it was a little more icky than I prefer.
You know, I would watch a movie or a TV show of this book. I think my first instinct is to say I'd prefer to see a movie about it. I think a TV show could be done, but I think the appeal for me is also partly that it'd be a little bit easier to understand in a movie or TV show because you'd be able to actually see the world. So I don't think the beginning would come across as confusing. I'd also just fucking love to see them cast Gideon. Like, I am dying to know who that actress would be.
Literally, I was just thinking it needs to be a female version of Ryan Reynolds.
No, yeah. It's Ruby Rose. That's who it would be.
Not someone so hot. Someone a little more sweaty. Ruby Rose is too pretty.
I feel like Gideon's kind of like muscly and fit and
I just think of Gideon as being so rugged. I think I'd like someone who's more like rugged attractive as opposed to like polished attractive.
But the person needs to be like dry humor, witty, dark, funny in order to play this character. I would be so curious to see. I feel like this has to be a movie, not a TV show. I don't know how you can make a TV show out of it. There's just not enough material, really, unless you were doing like the seasons. Or like you were doing the series, but I feel like you could just make a series of movies instead. Right. I don't know. It either would be like really good or really terrible. And I feel like it could be like a cult classic where, you know, like a Rocky Horror Picture Show of just like randomness and people love it and are addicted to it. And some people just don't get it. I could see that happening with this.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Okay, well, I think we're at Busy Girl Writings. I'll start. I think I'm going to give it a 4. If you can make it past the beginning, it's like a pretty good read. But the beginning is a little tough to get into, and it is long. And this is not for everybody. Like I said, lesbian space necromancers. It's very niche. I still liked it. We all, I think, still liked it overall. So I think it's 4.
Yeah, I agree. I think a 4 is a pretty safe bet because once you get into it, the pacing is amazing. It just takes a little bit to get into it. And even though it's pretty a niche topic, I think if you like fantasy or sci-fi, you'll enjoy this book.
I agree. I think even though the concept is super unique, I don't think it's necessarily a niche book. Like, I think it has wide appeal. I also am going to give it a 4. So we're all in agreement today. I think it's a great book to pick up if you just, you know, need something strange and random in your life. So go ahead and read it. And when you do, come back, because we are now at our spoiler alert section. Okay, our first question. This book is set in space with the, you know, it's a very intricate sort of type of religious science magic system. That's one of the more complicated parts of the book. What did you guys think of the different houses and the religion and the division of the planets?
I feel like I got a really good primer with the Hunger Games, because so I could split the different planets really well because I've read the Hunger Games religiously. I liked that the different planets had specialities of the different necromancer powers, because I didn't think there would be like differences in necromancer power, because like when you hear necromancer, it's just bringing back people from the dead. But when they break it down, it's like very much so more intricate and interesting, and like different levels of soul searching and bringing like reanimation and bodies back from the dead. So I thought that was really interesting. The setting, the house was super cool. Like, I can't say much about the ninth planet. I felt like that was a little flat. It was just kind of... It was District 12. It was a sewage pit full of like dead bodies. But I really liked the idea of the house being like alive, essentially. And they're all just kind of trapped in there saying like, you can kill each other. There are no rules here. So I found that kind of really interesting. So that's what made it like a really cool book.
I also love the house setting. That's why I kind of compared it to Inheritance Games. Like, the house is its own character, sort of, because they're kind of at its mercy and whatever lurks inside of it. I was and still am slightly confused about their whole religion-y thingy. I don't know why this king guy is their like supreme being that they worship. It never totally explains it. It references the Great Resurrection a bunch. Never totally explains it. Never totally explains why they need necromancers to go to war and what kind of forces they're battling and what danger they are. So there were a few things I would have like fleshed out more. Like, you got enough of it to understand it in general, but I'm of the like the opinion, if you're going to go world building like this, go all the way. Like, I want to know those details. Like, why do you want to win this competition and become this lector thing and fight these battles? Like, what are you fighting for, against? I don't know. I feel like there were a few things that could be explained better.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one that was confused by the war. I was like, who the frick are they fighting? They keep talking about this war and losing people. Who are they fighting? What is this war? When did it start? What's going on? Maybe that's explained in later books, but I was confused.
I was also confused. The lack of understanding. The war, I'm like, fine. I can live without knowing about that in this book. However, one of my like complaints is that we don't totally understand what a lictor is or what the benefit of being a lictor is. And I think that actually leaves the characters flat at some points because we don't fully understand their motivations for participating. So I think there would have been a lot of benefit to the book to fully explaining that. However, I'm also on the same page with you guys. I actually hated the ninth as a setting. Like, I could not wait to be off that planet. The house, I was in love. Even the little servant guys who like waited on them, I loved them. When he would get super scared and warn them about the stuff in the house, it like just scared me like to the bone. And I loved all those like bits of world building.
Part of the world building that you dive into is right at the beginning, you're introduced to Gideon. Gideon has this escape plot to join the military and leave the crappy ninth planet that she didn't want to be on in the first place. You never totally understand her origins in the book, so more to come, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, but okay. I'm going to interrupt you. Those are my other two things. Okay, we never understand the girl in the tomb. That is never fully explained, and like why she's so important. And Gideon, we can all say it, is dead, has been like consumed by Hera. So I'm like, why didn't Gideon's origin actually get explained? Like, yes, I'm so mad about that.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a theory.
No.
So I wish Gideon's origin wasn't, sorry. I wish Gideon's origin was explained as well. I think like the prologue said her mom like crash landed on the ninth, whatever. Maybe I'm wrong about that. That's what I somehow put in my head.
And they found those papers.
Yeah.
And the mom just said, Gideon.
I'm honestly thinking that Harrow's going to try and resurrect her or bring her back. And I think that's why we haven't totally like closed the book on Gideon. Because Harrow said that she would like try anything to get her back. So I honestly think either in the next book, because that's Harrow Hawk the Ninth, she might try to bring Gideon back.
So this isn't a spoiler. This is the first chapter of the second book that I'm currently reading. There's no mention of Gideon whatsoever. And Harrow hates her life and can't hold a sword. So I have no idea where it's going. And if that's true, I hope that's true because I like Gideon.
I like Gideon too.
Who I didn't like at the beginning was Harrow. Because you first meet her and she's just like trying to foil Gideon's plan to leave. And you're like, well, this chick's funny. I want her to leave and go do fun things. But then she does the thing where she like raises all the skeletons and had planted them the night before. I was like, okay, this girl sucks, but that was badass.
She's a bad bitch.
I adored Harrow. This is why I know for sure I'm going to read the second book, is I can't wait to be inside Harrow's head. I loved Gideon as well, like definitely not knocking Gideon, but Gideon's whole thing is that she's like a little bit more like simple, like she's the muscle. You know, she's still smart, but like Harrow is this true mastermind genius.
Harrow is unhinged.
Harrow is completely unhinged. I think Harrow is so like morally gray, self-serving genius that it makes her, but like still like a good person. And that makes her like so interesting to read. And so I loved like Gideon and Harrow's sort of enemy arc, because I thought that they were the perfect adversaries for each other.
Yeah. Let's be clear. Harrow, at like the age of 10, enters a tomb that like her religion says should never be opened, sees like the great evil, which is like this little girl. Gideon tells her parents. Her parents hang themselves because they're so upset by the news. So she then reanimates her parents to pretend as if they are still alive for the ninth house. Like this girl
is she weakened crazy. Up Bernie's them for like 7 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But she's so impressive. I feel like you just have to give her props for like everything she went through.
I love her, but she cray.
Well, and like I think one of the things that Gideon ends up appreciating about her is that she pushes herself so hard to the point it repeatedly almost destroys her. But she's like that set on achieving her goals that Gideon's kind of like, all right, like I can play along with this.
She also, I think Harrow has some of the best motivations that we come to understand, and that is making up for her parents' horrible sins of essentially massacring their whole planet in order to have Harrow. And I really enjoyed us like learning about how heavy that weight feels on her shoulders and how she's like living, trying to like fix this horrible deed they've done.
Well, and she wants to become a lector also to, because she saw what was in the locked tomb and she was like, oh shit. And so she's like, someone's got to be around to stop that chick if she ever comes back.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's no children of the ninth except for Gideon and Harrow, because Harrow's parents like absorbed.
But once again, it never explains why Gideon survived and none of the others didn't.
I know. That did piss me off too. I'm hoping that they investigate that more now that we're in Harrow's head. But yeah, I thought because everyone else, like, I guess you could say that power or greed or whatever as motivations for becoming a lictor, but she actually had like a true motivation of protecting the universe, but also protecting her house because she's the last of their house's line. So her death and her dying would mean that the ninth house is gone.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, that leads into our next question. So the trials between the eight remaining houses vying for this immortal electorship thing, And they're all trapped in this house with no direction and no rules other than don't enter a locked room without permission. And for a while, they're really just wandering around, like looking around, counting doors. Like, it's very strange. What did you think?
I loved it. I loved the whole unexplained mystery. I love the one rule. I love how like cordial it seems. Like, you know, locked doors offer this allure, and we know the whole time they're going to have to find a way into these doors, but we don't really know how. I also love the actual trials and how they sort of force the necromancers to work with their plus ones. And I love how it sort of reveals things about this like horrific lectorship secret. My only complaint is that we didn't get to see more of the trials because I really enjoyed them and wanted to know what they all were.
Yeah, I wish we could have seen like every single trial in order to, because it's like supposed to be parts of a whole of becoming a lector, and you like learn how to do these different magics and pass these trials to become a lector. But instead of like Harrow going through every single one of them, it's each person goes through one of them and then they can kind of combine their knowledge to figure it out. I wish they each had to go through each one of them.
Well, what does Bud does go through all of them? He just doesn't get a key for every one of them, right? Was it him or the girl who went? Someone went through like all of the trials.
Who would do?
And I think the most interesting aspect was like they're necromancers, but these trials force them to do things that were like very morally gray or outright morally wrong in their opinions. Which kind of clued into like you're not gonna like this lector thing. It is not good. So it's really interesting how it like pushed different characters different ways based on their moral uprightness.
Yeah, literally the whole point, or not the whole point, but part of the point is to erode your morality and to make them feel like they had more ownership of their cavaliers, as they ultimately had to decide if they wanted to actually like literally like absorb.
Yeah.
They're cavalier.
The fact that it's described as absorbing and that you take their powers and take their ability to like use a sword, that is so messed up.
At one point, they were like, eat them. I was like,
yeah.
What?
Yes.
Thank God it's not truly eating them.
I could not believe it.
They like, ate their souls.
I know this is like yanking the discussion in a different direction. But I want to ask, how did you guys feel when you realized that's what was going to happen?
I'll be honest, I did not realize it until they said it outright, because I was like, "There, like I, that didn't thought did not cross my mind of like you have to absorb a person in order to gain power."
Well, I realized it as I was talking about what's her face's eyes being the different colors, and I had talked about the colors of the Cavalier's eyes before, and I was like, "Oh God, something terrible has happened." And then I explained it. I was like, "Ooh."
Oh, you mean when
Ianthe
is
when
what
she
I
had
think
killed her
Avatar.
Cavalier,
yeah,
and was yeah. going through her crazy stuff. I was like, oh, something has to do with him. And then it explained it. I was like, oh, this is sick and twisted, and I don't know what goes on in this author's head.
Yeah,
yeah. I was proud of myself. I got it even before that, and it's because that like smart sciencey guy says something about how you have to endlessly create power, and the only way to do that is like absorb like another source. He obviously explains it in a way that's better. I don't remember the exact way he said it, and I was like, oh my God, they're gonna have to eat their cavaliers. Like, are they literally gonna eat them?
Honestly, like, impressive for you to yeah. predict that.
I mean, I got the whole like it's gonna take both of them thing, but not the whole it's gonna take one of them eating the other.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And then the trials, as soon as he said that, the trials clicked for me, because they were all about the necromancer taking over control of the cavalier, or like using the cavalier's body in some way. And so I was like, I don't know why. I just it clicked for me, and I thought it was so insane. It's like the
also,
weirdest
all of that made me adore Silas. I loved him and his cavalier, and how it's like Harrow's opposite, but they somehow end up working out together. And he's like morally upright enough to be like, I don't want this anymore. I value my cavalier too much. And you would think Hera would be the one, the first one to kill her cavalier because she's not really her cavalier. But I don't know. It's very interesting. Also, I appreciate that there is a like index in the back that explains each of the characters and what their roles are and why their names are what they are. So thank you to the author for making world building more digestible.
Yeah, that's super smart. I didn't even know that, but that's awesome.
I thought that whole twist was really insane. And at first I was like, no, this is not happening. They're not going to do this. Hera is not going to literally like ingest Gideon. Like, this is not happening. And then I felt like she kind of pulled it off. Like, the moment was right. And it was so emotional. And like,
okay, I did call Gideon sacrificing herself.
For sure.
Once we knew what was like what it took to be Electra, I'm like, well, Gideon's so friggin' loyal for no apparent reason because Hera sucks that she's gonna do it somehow.
I know, yeah. It's just obvious because you're like, somehow they're gonna be forced into this or something.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like my review said, like, for the most part, you could see what was coming and you spent it like reading, going, please don't happen, please don't happen. And then it happens. Yeah. You get punched in the gut.
That last battle lasts a long fucking time. So the whole time I was like, so how's Gideon going to die? Okay, she probably has to sacrifice herself because Hera's never going to do it voluntarily. Because you know that Hera's pretty guilt-ridden about the whole being 200 children in one.
But can we talk about she just falls on a pointy fence and goes, eat me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I was like, oh, that was very Gideon of her.
Yeah. Literally. Oh my gosh. Okay, so back to our actual questions. And then back to Gideon, our favorite little sacrifice. What did you think of the whole twist that Gideon actually survived the massacre of the Ninth House? And she didn't just, you know, she didn't just not get sick. She had some like freak thing that caused her to not be able to be poisoned.
I mean, I kind of expected it. Like, she was obviously special in some way, despite surviving the sickness because of how she arrived on the planet and no one knew where she came from and blah, blah, blah. So like, you knew she was gonna be special. I'm just pissed off it never explained it.
Right. That's why I really honestly think that she's somehow coming back in the second book.
I don't know. So my initial prediction, once I figured out that the Lictors have, you know, ingested their cavaliers, was that Gideon and Harrow would find some loophole because Gideon's special. And so the Lictorship would be able to be achieved through some other weird way. Like, maybe there's some, like, you know, like the mating bond where they can pass into each other's heads, but they don't have to be fully absorbed by each other or something. I was waiting for something like that to happen. And that's why I was also expecting them to more fully explain Gideon, because I thought it would become a bigger part of the book. But it's really just a sort of like huge red herring. So yes, the whole time I knew Gideon had to be special in some way. I do like that the twist that Gideon just survived by accident makes her whole world make a little more sense, because now she gets why everyone treated her like such a strange, freakish child. And I thought that was really interesting part of her development.
Okay, so we've talked about a fair amount of twists that have happened in this book, like the Lictors, like the Cavaliers being absorbed, the staff actually being shades, not quite reanimations. But what was y'all's favorite twist?
Well, I liked when they found out that Dulcinea's cavalier had been dead the whole time. I was like,
yeah,
what the hell?
I did not see that one coming.
Yeah, I was like, well, I shouldn't be surprised, but I am. Because it kept talking about how dull and boring he was. But I was like, I don't know. That one was like funny. I don't know. Everything in this book was morbidly hilarious. And that one...
Yeah, it's like
they were like, Well, dead guy was walking around the whole time, carrying around the sickly girl. I was like, what?
I don't know. What are all the twists? Can we list them? I feel like I'm forgetting some of them.
So, like,
the priest guy is like 1,000 souls or something.
Yeah.
The scientists never left after discovering the Lecter stuff. They're the, like, skeletons.
Dulcinea actually being a Lector.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was my favorite one, personally, because I liked her as a character because I knew she had to be evil in some way because, like, Hera was so anti her and Gideon was, like, falling in love.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really cool that she actually, like, I don't know if she killed the sixth house, seventh house person, whoever, whatever.
No, she, like, died on the way, it said.
Oh, yeah, died on the way. And then she took her place. And I thought that was really, really interesting of her being a Lector trying to actively kill the other Lectors and also kill the Emperor.
Yeah, which it never explains why she wants to kill the Emperor either.
Yeah, he just has this cryptic line about how she was the best of us and it twisted her. And I was like,
I mean, to be fair, living for thousands of years in an endless war for a reanimated Emperor would probably make you go slightly crazy.
Well, and she lived that whole time with that blood disease just that whole house has.
Yeah, so she's probably very much in pain.
Yeah, but that chick was crazy.
For sure.
I don't know. There were a lot of surprises. I was kind of sad. It's not really a surprise, but when suddenly they killed off the husband and wife from the fifth house.
Yeah.
They were the ones I was attached to first, and now they're like dead in a puddle at the bottom of a ladder. I was like, oh, rude. And
I knew, like, you know that some of the characters are going to die, especially some of the lovable ones. But
go for the lovable ones first? What?
I don't know. It caught me so off guard. I was really not expecting it at all, and it made me... I did love that twist because I was not ready for it.
Yeah, because they seemed so uninterested.
Party,
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess that was sort of a twist, but sort of not. There was first death, so it was the first time you kind of figure out everyone's gonna die.
Yeah, I think that's like a twist in the sense of like, technically they have no motivations to kill each other except for the necromancers to the Cavaliers. But you realize that someone is actively trying to murder other houses.
To get the keys.
Yeah.
Maybe. Anyway, you mentioned earlier that you think the battle at the end is super long, which it is. I was like, okay, take down this bone monster thing already.
Yeah. But
otherwise, what did you think about this battle, Hera and Gideon versus this Lector chick and... Camilla is oddly still around.
I love the start of it with Silas like creating himself as an atomic
bomb. Awesome. Yeah. Poor Camilla.
I was sad, but at the same time, I'm like, that's an awesome way to go. Congrats.
His morally uprightness like stuck.
Yeah. And that's kind of all we kicked it off. And then I thought Camilla was a badass. I'm interested to see her moving forward. Maybe she becomes Hera's Cavalier.
So to be honest, it opens with the Emperor telling Hera they found no one except her and Ianth and pieces of like Silas and one other. Camilla's MIA at the beginning of the next book.
Interesting.
As is Gideon's body.
I loved Camilla. Camilla,
I did too.
Her necromancer. I think we've said this before actually, but they were my two favorites outside of Hera and Gideon, and
absolutely
Camilla survived, and I really wish that his plan did more. I wanted his plan and his sacrifice to have more impact.
When at first you were like, oh, maybe he's evil because he like trapped Gideon while he went in there, and then you're like, no, he's just so noble. Aw.
He's dead. Yeah, goodbye.
Yeah. So the battle ends, I guess. Don't really know because it kind of just like ends the book there, I guess, because Gideon sacrifices herself for Hera to become Lector. What did you think as an ending, as far as that goes? What are we thinking?
I thought the ending was good. I thought it made at least the how you become a Lyctor mystery clear. I got enough that I was satisfied with the ending, but there was also quite a few things that were sort of a cliffhanger that made me want to read the second book. So I thought it was a satisfying like bow tie on the most important matters of this book.
Yeah, I'm glad that the evil girl is dead. And is it made that clear? I thought it seemed like she was dead. Maybe she isn't.
Yeah, but Iant like isn't, so.
Iant, yeah, no, she is not. But like.
But she's Iant, also crazy evil chick.
I was pronouncing it Ianthe.
Okay,
Actually, it says in the back of the book. Hold on.
Okay, because I'm thinking Ianthe from ACOTAR, so yeah.
Exactly.
Ianthe.
Ianthe. Interesting.
Okay. She's interesting, though. I mean, she is crazy, but I mean, she's more power hungry than like the other Lyctor, who was like thousands of years old and just trying to murder everyone. She's more of like, she didn't want to murder everyone else, but they attacked her. She just wanted the power of being a Lyctor. So I'm more curious to see where she goes from here.
Me too.
Well, I think that's pretty much the end of the discussion. Do you guys have any book recommendations? I know I personally have never read anything like this. But what can you come up with?
Hear me out. Ender's Game.
Ender's Game?
Yeah.
Mm.
It's a sci-fi book where you're really thrown into the world. It's a very complicated world. It's in this dystopian future. And there is one really, really big twist at the end that is very surprising, and I feel like it sort of has like the same catastrophic effect as like the twist in this book, where it like changes the fabric of like the reality, and you understand this deep dark secret. So yeah, I think that's actually, I think if you like this book, you'd probably like Ender's Game, even though Ender's Game is like very much a lot older than this book.
This book sort of reminds me of The Priory of the Orange Tree in like a shorter form, like similar kind of different world building. I mean, one's more fantasy and in the past, this one's more futuristic. But like if you're looking for that sort of vein of characters and I don't know, that one's a lot longer, though. So I don't know if someone who reads Gideon the Ninth will enjoy Priory of the Orange Tree if you don't enjoy length. That's kind of the only thing I can think of that's somewhat adjacent.
A book I haven't read in ages, but I see on my shelf when I sit in here that, I don't know, feels kind of like it. Did you guys ever read the book Gone?
Mm-mm.
I might have. Yeah, I did. It's that teen science fiction where half the everyone over 18 disappears.
Right, and they all start developing, like, nuclear, maybe, powers, and there's some weird forces that, like, disintegrate kids and stuff, and they have to figure out this thing with no direction. That's kind of the vibe I get, I guess. I never ended up finishing the series, but the first book definitely gives me similar vibes.
I read, like, the first four, and I thought that they were really good. The only reason I stopped reading them was because they were stressing me out too much.
I think I read two or three, but they were like still coming out. That's why I never finished them, because I don't know. I aged above them while they were still coming out, I guess. I don't know. If you like weird, twisted sci-fi, that's kind of, yeah, even though they're technically YA, I don't know.
That sounds interesting, though.
Yeah, I'd recommend.
Okay. Well, there you have it. This book is super unique and interesting, so please read it. Let us know what you think. We are at Busy Girls Pod. Like and review this podcast, and then send us a message with your own thoughts.
Yeah, if you think we're just weird as hell for reading this book, let us know that too.
Join us on the weird train.
Also, yeah, I need to talk to other people who have read this book.
Yeah, honestly.
Like one of those like I need to talk about with multiple people because I'm processing it.
Have y'all ever recommended a book even though you didn't like it to other people just so you can discuss it? Because this is kind of what it's feeling.
But I kind of like, I don't know. Okay.
No, I liked it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. It's like, hey, come be confused with me.
Yes. All right. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.